Hi, this is Mark Trencher. I just wanted to share with you information on a new podcast named Orthonomics. We explore fascinating and timely Orthodox Jewish community issues through the dual lenses of actual data and informed conversation with communal experts. Our recent episodes have talked about such things as the challenges of being Orthodox in a secular society, why some people become Orthodox and why some others leave, the cost of Orthodoxy, educational issues, the evolving roles of women, and upcoming is a new study on the lives of Orthodox Jewish single individuals. So take a listen. The Orthonomics podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Queens Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
As long as there has been a Jewish nation, music has been an integral component of its history and culture. From the Shira sung by our ancestors at the Yam Suf to the brilliant compositions of David HaMelech, from the exquisite harmonies of the Levim and the Beis HaMikdash to the musical expressions of faith contained in the melodies of the great Hasidic Rebbes of Europe. But in this century, and even more so during the past 50 years, there's been a virtual explosion of creative Jewish song. And at the heart of that explosion is this week's guest.
Hi there, this is Avi Rottenberg, a composer, songwriter for many years in the Jewish music industry, and I'm delighted to be here on the Jewish Living Podcast.
Avi will give us insight into his newest album, Journeys, Volume 5, as well as a glimpse behind what goes into creating so many songs we have come to know and love. AB, thank you so much for joining me this week. For those of the listeners out there that don't know who you are, which I don't know how many are there that don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of a brief background of your history in Jewish music and the music scene in general?
Well, I started recording songs of my own back in the 1970s, together with Leibel Sharfman of Rabbi Sun's fame, Yossi Sonnenblick of Pirchei fame, and we started with an album series called Dveikus, which were songs that you would sing at Shalashudis, songs you'd sing at a Kumsitz. They were slow and soft and thoughtful songs, but they were all written to Psukim. They were written to the liturgy or something from Tehillim, classic style songs. Obviously, every generation changes, so a little bit different than, let's say, the Kalbach style from the 60s. And they were popular and successful. And we never performed. We weren't a performing group. We just recorded. In those days, everything was done on vinyl. And then several years later, we started recording on vinyl as well as on cassette. With the second Dveikus album, I think that one came out on cassette. The first one was only on vinyl. And we did one that was in 72, then 75, we did the second one, 1980, we did a third. And then in the 80s, I started writing songs in English. They were still Jewish themes. I wrote a song called The Place Where I Belong about a Sefer Torah that was from Kiev, and it was hidden during the Holocaust. And I started writing ballads and stories with Jewish themes and Jewish concepts, Jewish ideas. And those songs I labeled the album Journeys, and over the years I did four albums between 1984 and 2004. Over 20 years I did four albums, and then now 18 years later in 2022 I've released the fifth Journeys album, and you've heard the cuts, right? You've heard the tracks,
absolutely,
right?
And that's the reason that we have you on this week.
This came out a week before Purim.
Yeah, so a week before Purim. We're recording this a week after Purim or so. And hopefully everybody out there can get out and get it before Pesach hits and before Sfira hits. I wrote an article recently, and I called this the most heavily anticipated Jewish album, maybe in history. I'm not sure. But just because of the large gap between the time when Journeys 4 came out and now Journeys 5, My first question for you is, how difficult are these albums to write? These are obviously, you're not taking your lyrics from Psukim, which a lot of from music does. And you do it yourself as well. And my always the always the thought I always had about Journey songs is that if you take the melody out, they would still be poetry, which is not the same thing that I could say about a lot of other from music that writes secular words, that writes English words. How difficult is this type of an album to put together?
I would not say that it rises to the level of poetry. I don't think so. I think it's still songwriting. I think poetry, I'm not a poet. I don't see myself as a poet. There's something about true poetry that it goes beyond what I do. But what I've been successful at doing is there's a magical point where words and music blend together, and then the words become more meaningful because of the music. So yes, you may know the tune to Joe DiMaggio's Card, but if you take that tune and just sing the tune without the words, okay, it's a nice little, you know, song, but when it's that combination of those words and the music that you get something special, that's quality songwriting. And I think I've been very, very fortunate to be able to do that. But I think I mentioned recently that, you know, you can take a good speech and you can give a wonderful thought over and a wonderful idea that's very inspiring and it's uplifting, and people will go home and they'll think about it for a few minutes or a few days, and then it flies away, it disappears, it dissipates. But when you take that same theme, that same idea, and you clothe it with a song, it can be very, very strong and very, very, it can become ingrained in somebody. So somehow music has a power, a certain spiritual, metaphysical power that's lamala minateva, it's beyond our comprehension, and it somehow can take an idea and make it more meaningful with a pasuk as well. You say Yishivchi Kamayim Libek, and you sing Shlomo's Niggun to that, and you start really, really opening your heart and crying and thinking of Hashem in a better way. So music has a special power.
It's funny you mentioned that, because one of the questions I was going to ask you later, but because we're on this topic, what I consider probably your most famous song is Hamalach. And the reason that I consider that the most famous song is because that's the first song that many children remember. That's a song that regardless of where you are on the Frum scale, you know that song. Your parents sing that to you at night. You hear that every year at Kol Na'arim. That is a song that every child knows from the time that they can remember. And that's part of that. When I think of the legacy that A.B. Rodenberg is going to leave behind, that is one that is probably unparalleled to anybody else, that it's that type of a song that not only reminds you of the words because you say it at night, but it also has the sense of bringing you back to your childhood, to where there was a time that you didn't have to think about too many other things. And it's kind of that simplistic time in your life.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. No, I very, very feel very blessed to have been able to write that song. Another song of mine that many, many people, like you say, across the spectrum of the Jewish spectrum from left to right, is Achenu, which is known well. But there are many other composers who have songs like that. It's
right. You
know, Geshe Tzar Maod by Baruch, and Shlomo's got a dozen of them at least.
Yeah.
If not more, a couple of dozen. And there are Yossi Green and Rachmiel Bagan. They all have songs that have captured the minds and hearts of people across the globe.
And more modern day, you have Baruch Levine, who does the same thing with a lot of
Baruch Levine with the Zakeini. It's, you know, there are certain, there's a certain shlichus from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we were zochet to have, and you know, he chose us to be the a mouthpiece for, I guess, a thought or an idea, an emotion that he wanted the world to have. And why he chose us, that I have no clue, but he did, and we're very thankful that he did.
And it's funny you mentioned that's a similar concept to one of your songs is The Band, and that is the exact concept of people that don't.
I wouldn't say that I'm as pure-hearted as the people in the band. You know, those people, you know, when Mashiach comes, they're gonna end up on the stage. But I don't think that's the reason I was chosen. But for whatever, maybe Schlesovos, you know, something in the past that one of my forebearers did that ended up landing on me. So,
and for our regular listeners, that the band is our theme music for this show. It's our introduction and it's our outro. And I remember when I first started the show, I emailed you to ask your permission to use it, and you said no problem. And I very much thank you for that permission.
Sure.
We do have you on here to talk about Journeys 5, because we could talk about music forever and all the songs and albums that you've composed. But I do want to focus a little bit on the new album. First of all, I listened to your and watched your interview with Yossi Zweig, which is available on YouTube. Anybody can go see it. And for anybody out there who wants a more generalized understanding of all the songs that are on this album, they should go watch and listen to that interview. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to do something a little different. What I've been able to ascertain is every one of the Journeys albums has a little bit of a flair to it. That's their own. It kind of has more of one type of song over the other. So for instance, Journeys 3, there was a lot of humor in that one. We've Got the Music, and Yeshiva Shered, you have Pesach Blues, a more of a humorous tone.
That's because Journeys 2 was very, very heavy and very, right. Very sort of, a little bit too intense.
Right.
And I felt that I needed,
with the third album
to lighten it up a little bit, because, you know, with Teardrop and Neshama and Memories and songs like that, it was just a very, very intense album.
And, yep.
And one that was difficult to listen to, certainly listen to the whole thing in one sitting.
When I first listened to this album, the first thing that jumped out at me is that there's a lot of Holocaust in this. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's the theme of this. But I don't think that's the theme, if you'll indulge me for a second. I believe that the theme of this album is legacy. There is so much to this album that goes on either the legacy of the Journeys brand or the legacy of Jewish music. So if you're talking about things like the second version of We've Got the Music 2 continues the song progression of Jewish music, the tribute to Moshe Yes and the revamp of his classic Ain't No Bishul L'Klishishi, by the way. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal song and original, mm-hmm. and one of the few times I could see that, oh, there's a cover and a different version, it still holds mm-hmm. up. And of course, you still have the Holocaust songs, specifically From the Ashes. Now, I want to go into all of those things a little bit more specifically, but let me start with From the Ashes, sure. Because what I believe that From the Ashes is the best song on this album. I apologize to all the other songs, mm-hmm. But it's my favorite one. It's the one that I've listened to on loop. And I know that you've been able to read the article that I wrote about this song specifically and Holocaust music throughout the Journeys album. For those of you out there who haven't been able to read this article, the history of the Holocaust song, and especially in Journeys, is looking at the Holocaust from that present moment in time, whether it's The Man from Vilna, where it's a story about a story who looks back at a specific moment during the Holocaust or right after the Holocaust, but it starts with a conversation with I guess the speaker and an older gentleman on a flight. Whether it's talking about The Place Where I Belong, where it's a situation where based on a true story of a Sefer Torah that was on display about that specific moment, even the cat ate the canary, because that was a whole big situation where you had, you know, the Swiss banks and their whole political aspect to what they did during the Holocaust and since then. From the Ashes is really kind of how we need to view the Holocaust today. Unfortunately, we've lost most of the people that have survived at this point, not all, but the vast majority. And now we're looking back as to those people, what did they provide to us? And this is what I try to capture in the article. And then when I spoke to you, because I didn't know this at the time, this is actually not written by you. Correct. This is written by your daughter. Yes. And that kind of adds to this. I wish I knew that at the time, because I would have added that this is a 35-year-old, I don't know how old your daughter is. I'm a 35-year-old person. But this is what
younger than you. She's a bit younger. Yes.
That's fine.
My youngest child.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Very talented. Yes. But this is how my generation needs to look at the survivors and what they did for us. I was wondering if you could kind of expound on the concept of legacy with this particular song.
Well, before we talk about that, I'm happy to talk about that. Sure. I you asked me before about difficulty in writing and especially writing your own original lyrics. So the truth is that 2004 was the last Journeys album, and for about 14 years, I really did not have material. I had, I had in the back of my mind, I think ever since Moshe has passed away, that I'd want to do a tribute song for him. And I loved Ain't No Bishul because of its whimsy and just his take on going to, I just imagine him going to yeshiva in Eishat Torah. Maybe it was one of the first classes he ever went to, and they taught Hilchas Bishul. And he came, you know, back to his room and he picked up his guitar and I'll learn something today. You know, there ain't no Bishul. I just have that picture in my mind. And I always maybe had that in mind, but I would never come out with an album if that was going to be the key song of the album. The Journeys album has to have material of, you know, of on a more national or international level. And it has to be, it has to have more depth to it than that. So maybe I had that in the back of my mind I could do. I Had Nothing in Your Life was a song that I had written maybe even before Journeys 4, but if for some reason I didn't, you know, feel that I had the right person to sing it or that it would work. And Lucky Fingers Max I had around for a long time. But again, I didn't feel I had material for a song. And then my daughter brought me From the Ashes, and my son, my daughter Shifty, and my son Hanania brought me My Little Town. So those two songs came from my children. All of a sudden I said, wow, you know, those songs are of extremely high caliber and depth and meaning. And because they provided me with those songs, I really started, you know, working harder and focusing. And within a few years, I was able to come up with some of the other songs. And I wrote Al HaTzadikim, which is also a Holocaust themed song. So I really have Hakaras HaTov to them for really getting me out of whatever writer's block I was in and helping me schlep me back to the studio. So big Hakaras HaTov to them. And then as far as From the Ashes is concerned, it's a song about Hakaras HaTov. It's a song about multiple themes, but one of the themes in that song is, of course, Hakaras HaTov, thanking those people for building our world, for building the Jewish world we have today. They came out of the camps with nothing. And they could have run away and they could have thrown everything behind them. They could have forgotten the teachings and the traditions of their mothers and fathers. They refused to do that. And I'm not talking about only in the Frum community. I'm talking about worldwide and building Israel and fighting, coming off the boat from the internment camps in Cyprus and not even moving into a house, but being handed a gun and going straight to the front to fight a war. These are people who had nothing, yet they said, we're not giving up our faith. We're not giving up our love for our homeland. We're not giving up our connection to the Jewish people, to Yiddishkeit, on whatever level, on whatever madrega. And that was an amazing, amazing generation. We talk about, the Americans talk about the greatest generation being the, you know, the people who went to war and landed on Normandy Beach and stormed Europe and liberated Europe from Hitler, Yimach Shemo Vizikra. Our greatest generation are the Holocaust survivors. And the fact that my daughter wrote it because she had grandparents who were Holocaust survivors and she sat at their table often, you know, we would spend a lot of time together and she heard their stories and she saw what they did with their lives and how they rebuilt their family and the community here in Toronto. They were major contributors to the growth of this community, as so many other people in Toronto were Holocaust survivors, helped to build the city, and she saw that and it made an impression. And she's a great musician, so she put the two together.
And it's phenomenal. And no matter what community you're living in, listening to this or listening to the album, that I'm sure that that's true about your community as well. And it's interesting that you mentioned the greatest generation, because the two generations you mentioned, the ones who fought in World War II and the ones who came out of it and built from the ashes, that's the same generation. I feel like it says something about the people from that time. They were built from maybe some of the stronger stuff that we have today.
But what she did, which is in my, you know, brilliant in my mind, was that she, there's something very subtle there. In the secular world, Holocaust remembrance has become really a sort of a pillar of Judaism. Many people who don't have Torah and mitzvahs, their connection to Judaism is through the Holocaust. remembering, never again, donating to the Wiesenthal Center and to the United States government's Holocaust Museum and Yad Vashem and never forgetting and connecting Israel to that and fighting and all of that is wonderful. Anybody has a connection to Judaism, whether it's through the joy of Judaism or through the pain and suffering of Judaism, those are all meaningful ways for us to connect to our heritage. But what is the reason that they want to remember the Holocaust so much? Because we see a world around us that's forgetting it, and we see a world that's denying it, and we see people are saying it's a myth and this and that, but it was witnessed by millions, and we know how true it is, and we've seen the footage, and we've heard the stories passed on from generation to generation. But she does a little switch at the end, and she said, well, that's the same thing that happened a few thousand years ago. It was witnessed by millions, forever instilled in the Mamad Har Sinai, the revelation of the revelation on Mount Sinai was the source of our belief in Yiddishkeit. And just as you want to keep the fires and the flames of the Holocaust remembrance alive, we are keeping the flame of Har Sinai alive. And people don't even know it necessarily. It's the Pintali Yid, it's deep inside, and that flame can never go out.
And in that regard, I thought that perhaps From the Ashes is a response to memories, because in memories you ask, who will stand before a world knowing what to say when the very last survivor fades away? This is what we'll say. This is the answer that we have. We have this From the Ashes, this generation, and we will always remember that generation as the one who continued on the legacy.
I never thought of that, but I'm not going to disagree with you on anything you have to say about the songs, because you know, however people respond to a song is a truth in some way. You know, we may have something in mind, and we may have several things in mind, but you know, people take music and ideas and however they absorb them makes me very happy to hear, you know, different interpretations.
Absolutely. And there's one more thing I want to say on this song, and the difference between this and the other two Holocaust songs. This one you had the Maccabees, whereas the other two, where you had Alan Sadikim, which was Avram Fried singing it, and My Little Town, which is Shalom Lemmer, those were obviously solo artists, very well known voices, very recognizable, singing about personal stories. Whereas in From the Ashes, you had a group, an ensemble cast, who we might know from their videos and from their a cappella music, but I don't know that I'd be able to pick out individual singers from their song. So I don't necessarily know. And I kind of think that that fits with the theme of the song, that it's not about an individual, it's about a group. I don't know if that was done on purpose, but that was one of the things that I thought, like, this is a really interesting and perfect guest star to have on this album, on this particular song.
I'll tell you, you're not wrong to some extent. Even in My Little Town, if you'll notice in My Little Town, the baker has a name, the right. Tailor has a name, the Kala has a name, the Chassan has a name. The only one who doesn't have a name is the person singing the song.
Right.
Right? Whoever Shulam is representing in My Little Town, I would survive, his name is not given. We're not saying that Shlomo survived or Yankel survived. He is any Jew. He's any survivor. He is representing all survivors. We know of survivors who were one of, let's say, several hundred from their city who survived. Maybe there was a city of 10,000 Jews and a few hundred survived. But there are probably more than one town where there are probably towns where no one survived.
Yeah.
And there certainly would be towns where just one or two or three people survived. This story is based on was inspired by a true account by a relative of ours who claimed that he researched after the war and he was the only male survivor from his village. And we heard that story often. He said there were two other women who survived. He had a crazy, amazing story about how he escaped, but he was the only. So this is what started my son thinking about the idea of a town. But he has no name as well. So he is also nameless. So I would say that applies to Shulam Lemmer's song as well, even though he is certainly a famous singer, but it was a very difficult song to sing and a song where you needed a tremendous range.
Yeah.
in terms of vocal range, as well as different kinds of moods and different kinds of, because there were really three types of songs all built into one. With the Maccabees, I very much wanted it to be a younger group. These are younger. They're not very young. They're not teenagers. They're not in their early 20s. Maybe they're in their late 20s, early 30s. I wanted it to be a group that had a younger following. Look, I'm in my late 60s, and I'm a child of Holocaust survivors. Certainly that Holocaust is very meaningful to me. I saw it. I grew up in a shul where the people had numbers on their arms, just about everybody. So for me, the lesson of From the Ashes is important and it's significant, but it's not as crucial as it is for someone from your generation, and even more important, someone in the next generation, right? Your children and your colleagues' children. And they're not going to listen to, you know, if I had a couple of old guys my age, you know, even with beautiful voices singing that song, I think there would be less of a connection. I very much wanted it to be I want them to sing it on the road when they go and do shows, and when they go to communities, and when they spend a Shabbos, and they go to an NCSY convention, and they let them sit down, you know, after singing some of their very, very happy, wonderful, uplifting, joyous songs that gets everybody clapping and dancing. Let them sit down with candles and a dark room and tell the story of From the Ashes and what these people meant to us. And I think they can do that, and I hope they do.
And I spoke to one of the Maccabees, and I know that there's a demo out there of them doing this song just a cappella. I ride the train every morning with one of them, and we schmooze about this all the time. And he told me that there's this demo out there, and he they plan on going to perform this song, and I'd be interested in hearing what it sounds like as a strictly a cappella song. And you get a glimpse of it near the end, where you're bringing it all together.
Yeah, that's the scene at Har Sinai, mm-hmm. where ain kol ve'ain oneh, the Torah says nothing. There were no sounds. There were no other sounds. It was only Matan Torah and nothing else. So we wanted to take away all music and make it just the voices. And they did a wonderful job. And they came in from all over, and they worked on it, and they practiced, and they rehearsed. And then they came into Donnie Gross's studio, and we squeezed them even more and got some performances out of them. I don't know if they have another song, you know, with this type of emotion and this type of passion. And I know they have a lot of wonderful, uplifting and happy songs. And this maybe was a little bit out of their comfort zone, but as far as I'm concerned, they nailed it.
All right, so I want to shift over to a different song on the album that I think is a little bit different than anything that you've done before. That's The Ring. And the reason I say The Ring is a different type of a song that you've done, every Journeys song up until now had some sort of a connection to specifically Judaism, to Yiddishkeit, to religion in general, to Eretz Yisrael, something along the line. The Ring is a universal song. That is that song could hit with someone who is very from. That song could hit with someone who is a non-observant, any religion, living out somewhere in the sticks, because marriage is a universal concept. And mm-hmm. there is nothing in that song that's specifically Jewish, that's specifically
as well religious. As nothing in your life. The song that Mordechai Shapiro sings. There are no references to Jew, other than the fact that you know this is the Judeo-Christian ethic of living your life not just for yourself but living it for others. The Torah was the first place where, in society in general, there was this idea of charity, and there was this concept of trumos and maisus and matanos and pasach tiftach es yotcha, and take care of the almana and take care of the yasam. And I mean, all of these ideas, they all came from Torah, right? So yes, the idea of goodness and caring and are very much Jewish themes and are the gift of the Jewish people to the world. But you're right, those songs there's no Hebrew in those songs, and the songs are universal theme.
And you have other songs, like Conversation in the Womb could be a universal theme, but that does have religious undertones to it, obviously. But there's nothing necessarily specifically.
Who said it's a Jew? It's a universal theme song. Yeah. I have several songs like that. I'm very proud of them. And look, you know, very often we have brothers and sisters who don't know a word of Hebrew. And even if I have, you know, and now they call him Chaimel, and on Shabbos wears a Shtraimel, that's enough to make the song something that, well, that's not for me, you know.
Right.
But I have several songs where they really don't have that excuse, you know.
Yeah, a lot of the Moshe Yes songs are like that. A lot of the ones that he comes and sings.
My Zadie, well, no, Kiddush, you know.
But no, the ones that he sings on Journeys. Yeah, Ride the Train, is that, that's Moshe Yes, I believe.
Ride the Train is a universal song.
It's a universal song, yeah.
And Journey at Sea is a universal
Journey song. Journey at Sea was the next one that I was going to get to. But because you mentioned the Mordechai Shapiro song first, I like hearing different when artists try a different style. That's a gospel style. I don't know if I've ever heard a gospel style of a song on any of your albums before.
It's very light though. It's light, very light gospel. It's not heavy gospel.
Yes, I know.
A little bit of light. Yeah. But listen, it's certainly a legitimate form of musical expression. And this album has quite a few different genres.
Yes. And if you want to go into the sea shanty that you have of Journey at Sea, that was, I thought that was along the same lines of Ride the Train. It's this life story. It's this life progression and things, and just along that, those lines that you would get in any sort of song that talks about similar.
I would say Ride the Train is a little bit more about maybe the short duration of life, pack in, you know, what you can, because, you know, we don't know if you're getting off at the next station or if you can get to the end of the line, but either way, it's a train ride. It's not going to be that long. Whereas Journey at Sea is more about trials and tribulations and storms and knowing that you have to follow a path that's laid out for you if you're going to be successful, and that no mortal can conquer the deep. You know, those are things that you need to come on to a prayer and to look for outside help. And those are also universal themes, but little different than the train, but similar. You're right.
And the last song that I want to discuss really in this album, because we can go on forever about all these songs, but again, there's the Yossi Zweig interview that people should definitely check out. Lucky Fingers Max, and you did mention that. That seems to be a similar song style as Yankel, whereas there's the story about this hapless individual that goes through life and then something changes. I was wondering if there was any thought.
I don't see it as being similar to Yankel. I see it as being a song about being not, first of all, very often in Jewish music and our circles of Jewish music, Torah-based Jewish music, even in the English world, very often we're looking for happy endings. And I'm not so sold on that. I like songs to be more about reality. And I remember people complaining to me about the place where I belong. You know, the song ends where the Torah is still in a case of glass, and I don't take it out of a case of glass, and it doesn't find a new home in, you know, in a shul somewhere in Lakewood or in Eretz Yisrael, which could have been a very nice way to wrap it all up and make everybody smile at the end. But the truth is that if there are 6 million Jews in the United States, 5 million of them have no knowledge of Yiddishkeit. And for most people today, Torah is still munachas b'keren zavis. It's something, it's look but don't touch. It's a nice old artifact that talks about years gone by, but it has nothing to do with my life. So I felt that, you know, let's not make a happy ending. And Max doesn't really have a happy ending either. Max doesn't, you know, doesn't join a kollel. You know, he doesn't go to yeshivas eish sameach at the end of the day. And he's still Max, and he's still gambling. He even took the money the rabbi gave him and ran to the track with it, because he was very honest with the rabbi. He said, I'm a gambler, a hustler, a cheat. You don't know what you're doing. Don't give me the money. So really, the song is about two things. Number one, the rabbi, who refused to look at this man and say, well, you know, you're a gambler, hustler, I'm not going to help you. So the lesson of the rabbi is, all I see is a Jew, the old rabbi replied, who needs to get back on his feet. We shouldn't judge people. There's somebody there who needs to be helped. We don't have to, you know, study and analyze and find out his level of frumkeit or Yiddishkeit. Somebody needs help, help them. And number two, he ended up giving a donation to that shul. So he did something. He changed. He didn't change maybe the way we'd like him to change. He still has a long, long way to go, but every little step that a person takes is meaningful. And this is a song acknowledging the fact that when you're makar of somebody, you don't have to be makar of them all the way. You have to make them firmer than you are necessarily to be satisfied or happy that you tried. Every little step that that person took because of your actions is meaningful, important, and it certainly deserves a song on Jared's album.
I don't know if you had this in mind, but it sounds a little Jean Valjean-ish. I'm not sure if that was, I don't know if you're familiar with Les Mis at all, but the main character, like that, that's what he was, an escaped prisoner. No. And okay, well,
so what he had a mini, he did a little bit of tshuva.
Well, one of the things that he did, he was having trouble after he was released from prison, and he stayed overnight in a church and he stole from the church. Uh-huh. And when he was caught, they were brought back to the church, and the priest said, no, these were gifts, and he uh-huh. gave it to them. And that was like the spark that turned it for him. But when I was listening to it, that's another thing that I thought of, but I'm glad to know that that's not an inspiration. That was just something that also happened to be connected in my mind, at least.
No, it was not the inspiration.
Good. I'm glad.
I don't know. I mean, Les Mis has been around a long, long time, and Max has also been around a long, long time. I'm not sure. Yeah. How when was Les Mis?
Victor Hugo wrote it back in the 1800s. So it's been around for a while.
Okay.
I don't know how long the musical's been around, but the book's been around for a long time. Uh-huh. I want to talk to you a little bit about.
Well, I had a story like that when I was a kid. I was a kid in high school, and. I was in grade 9, and I was at the top of the class in Gemara, and I got skipped to the next grade. In 9th grade, they skipped me after like 6 or 8 weeks to 10th grade. And I got on my first test in 10th grade, was much harder, the boys were older. I got a 20 out of 100. And then right after that was the report card. And the 10th grade rabbi gave me like an 80 or an 85 on the report card, right? And I was so relieved when I took the report card home. I showed it to my parents, and they were delighted. I got an 85, this and that. And I went to him afterwards, and I said, Rebbe, I said, you were so nice to me. He said, well, I did it for a reason. You better deserve that 85 on the next one. So, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily tell the truth, but you can save somebody and change somebody's trajectory.
Yeah, absolutely true. Now let's move on a little bit to the future. Again, we can spend a lot of time on the rest of the songs. I want to just get a couple of other concepts in. So we've now seen H3. We've now seen Journeys 5. Are we going to get a new David Nefesh? Are we going to get a Dveikus 7? Are we going to get a Marvelous Mutos Machine 5?
I was in consultation with Shia Mandelwitz the other day, and we are going to put, hopefully this week, I'll put Leva Nefesh 1 and 2 up on the streaming sites. Those albums have not been uploaded.
They're in my CD case that I still have.
With the CD, you know, the cover, and we're going to upload those to Apple Music, Spotify, so people could stream.
Phenomenal.
You know, Achenu and some of the other songs. There's some wonderful songs there.
In Ve'a Geffen, for people who don't know.
In Ve'a Geffen, I very much enjoy, and Adon Olam from.
So
from,
I was going to tell you about Adon Olam a little
song,
later.
Yeah.
Adon Olam is my most underrated A.B. Rotten song. I want more people to know that song.
Okay.
People need to know that one.
Well, right? You're in the right business to help that happen.
That's what we're going to do. I tried to get a choir in my shul to sing it on Simchas Torah. They didn't have time to learn it, but that's what I wanted them to do. But that's my favorite song.
On Yom Kippur after Meir, you know, if you can get a beautiful bunch of guys together to sing it.
Absolutely.
Very powerful, yeah.
In my camp growing up, that was one of the songs the choir sang very well. I went to Magen Av, so I know you're a Chafetz Chaim person, and that's my connection to Chafetz Chaim. I went to Magen Av for like 13 uh-huh. summers.
So Gershon Kramer and...
Gershon Kramer was in Heller, but yeah. The thing about Marvelous Mutos Machine, I just want to get this in here. When you wrote that, the concept of somebody having the ability to view into your home and see the things that you're doing was very foreign. That is something that we do on a regular basis right now. I'm doing it to you right now, and you're doing it to me. We're looking into each other's homes. Is there something that you can do with an updated Marvelous Mutos Machine?
I mean, the absolute the whole ridiculous. I mean, yes, technology has come a lot closer to the Marvelous Mutos Machine, but But the ridiculous notion that it can tell before you even did it, you know, you're about to do it, you know? So it's pretty strange.
Maybe now, but in 10, 15 years from now, who knows? Maybe there will be machines that can tell you what you're about to do before you do it.
Maybe it was just the record, but how did it know to record, you know? Anyway, it makes no
true.
Sense.
That's true, but it's for a kid, so it's fun. But at some point, my kids will enjoy it as soon as I get around to playing it for them. I don't know why I haven't yet. We don't know if there's going to be a sequel album, another album that we might get a Leven FH 3 or Dvaika 7. We don't know what's coming down the pike. If you were to make a sequel song, because we got the music too, we got Ninth Man 2 on the Last Journeys. Is there another song that you think needs to have a follow-up version?
Well, we've got the music. The second version really was the last minute addition, because it really was the easiest song to write, because basically we're saying that 25 years have passed and music has changed, and it really has. I mean, it's not just that we have 25 years more songs and 25 years of additional artists. It really has changed so much. I mean, the entire for decades and decades, music was this analog product where you would sing and the vibrations of a person's voice could be recorded either on magnetic tape or etched into a piece of vinyl, and you're getting that reproduction back. But all of a sudden, with digital music and the portability of music, and the fact that take Ain't No Vishal and Cliche Lishi, so the guy who plays the banjo in that song played it in Nashville, right? He was a Nashville guitarist, and it was just an easy thing. We sent the track, sent the chart, and he played the music, and he has a certain ability that some guy in Borough Park who plays a beautiful guitar may not be able to capture. And that's the portability and the fact that everything is tuned and everybody sings exactly on. I mean, we listen to the old Dvaika set. Maybe that's part of their charm today, to listen back to music where not everybody sang on tune and there was a little bit more, it was a little more natural. But music has changed. But so I very much just simply wanted to say music has changed and the performers have changed, and it became a great industry. And music is part of everybody's lives so much more than it was when we were growing up. But Jewish music still needs to be Jewish music. Has to have something redeeming. It has to somehow connect us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or else it's just music. It's not music, and it's not significant. It's significant, but it's not as meaningful as real Jewish music. And I'm not saying this style or that style. Rap music can be Jewish music. Country music can be Jewish. They all can be. And if the audience and the intention of the songwriter and the vocalist is to do that, is to somehow bring people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
absolutely. You included him, Nissim Black. We definitely know that.
Right.
There was Matisyahu for a while that brought a reggae style that you could always adapt. Because Jewish music isn't, unless you're talking about klezmer, but Jewish music, as we know it as a from entertainment source or from communication source.
Klezmer is really Romanian music. As far as I'm concerned, you can listen to a Romanian album and close your eyes and you can think it's klezmer. It's pretty very similar. Maybe a few little, very minor differences. Maybe they don't use the accordion as much. I don't know. So that's Polish, you know. So if you take stick a Polish guy into a Romanian band and you've got klezmer.
You got klezmer.
It's not pure Jewish music. It's a style that
we adapted.
That we took on and was very popular for a while. Jewish people.
What you were saying before, when you listen to the original, we've got the music. Where forever will these songs exist on Chrome cassette and compact? Maybe not forever anymore. Does anybody have a cassette anymore?
No, there'll always be a museum somewhere that'll have a copy. You know, so it will exist.
So. We've been talking a lot about legacy. We spoke about, Hamalach and Achenu, and the fact that your songs are very commonplace to be sung under chuppahs. As a matter of fact, my mother had Mivon Siach at her wedding, and then I got to walk down to Birchas Habayis. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of people like that.
Thank you, Baruch Hashem. You didn't say your grandmother. Baruch Hashem, I'm still young enough.
No, but grandparents walk down to to Elon Elon. Songs are very much present. Any Shabbos, any given Shabbos, you could hear one of your songs. Any given wedding, you can hear one of your songs.
Yes, thank you.
So the two questions on that is, first of all, why have you never gotten into simcha music? That's not something that if you're dancing the first dance, you're not going to hear an A.B. Rottenberg song. That's not where your bread and butter is. But why has that never been a thing?
Music is a vet. It's like Rav Chaim Kanievsky just passed away. Rav Chaim Kanievsky was unique because he knew Kol HaTorah Kula. But all the other great, sages, let's say contemporary sages, they have strengths. This one knows Nezikin, this one knows Nashim, this one knows Halacha, this one knows Drush, he was so unique that he knew everything. But music, I'm very happy that I have a nice little piece of music that people enjoy my material. It's a little bit slower, it's a little bit softer. Certainly in the English language, I have a pretty strong presence there. And certainly I have a strong presence in music that is more thoughtful. It's not just, entertainment. It's not just there for the, I don't write hits that come along and stay for 2-3 months and then really they get forgotten. I try to write songs that have meaning so that they will have legs.
Yeah.
Because if you want to have a Shabbaton and you want to have an Arachim and you want to have a Project Inspire weekend and you want to talk to them about Olam Haba, well, Conversation Looms is a song that it's not going away, because if somebody wants to bring in some music into that program, well, here's something that you can use. So other songs come and go, and they don't last as long. And I'm very happy that I don't have songs in every genre or every style, but the songs I've been able to write, fortunate enough to write, have been hanging around for quite a while.
Is there a reason you never did like a solo A.B. Rottenberg album? Every album you've ever put out is collaborations. Has there ever been like an interest in doing just A.B. Rottenberg?
Well, the closest thing to an A.B. Rottenberg solo album is Leiva Nefesh. That was, right. But it wasn't produced by me. That was produced by Shia Medelwitz, and he very much wanted me to do my own solo album, and I thought he was crazy, for wanting me to do that. But he was very much very, very enjoyable to work with him under his direction, and I'm proud of those albums. But look, I'm not really a top vocalist. I can sing okay. I have a half decent voice. I certainly know how to sing my own songs in a way that I try to bring out the emotion or the meaning or the message. Perhaps sometimes I feel I'm the only one who can do it, and that's why I sang it. But I'm not a performer. I don't go around on stage. So if somebody is out there and he's singing at weddings and he's singing at many concerts and that's his parnasa, so then obviously he needs to come out with more material. And so I've been very fortunate in that way. It's never been my parnasa. It's always been a hobby that I love very much and I'm very invested in. And so I never really felt that need to push things out or put things out in my name.
So whenever I have a musician or an artist on, I ask them three specific questions. Now, the first question, if you'll indulge me, the first question is probably not going to be very much relevant to you because of what you just said. But the first question is, do you prefer performing at simchas or at concerts? I don't know that you do either.
I don't enjoy performing at all. Yeah. I will perform on stage, and I do so from time to time. I'll tell you what I enjoy doing. I enjoy kumzitz. I enjoy sitting at the piano with some other chevra who know how to sing, and maybe there's a guitar, maybe there's a keyboard, to give a little back. And we sing songs, and we can sing English, and we can sing Hebrew, and we can sing Shlomo. It doesn't have to be mine. And we get together and sit for a few hours and fabreng and sing and try to, try to get a little closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and think about the words or I enjoy, in a Kiruv environment where I can talk to people about these themes of faith and themes of Yiddishkeit, and hopefully make an impact.
Wow. Yeah. We actually.
So those are things I enjoy. Those I enjoy.
I don't want to like provide you with so much for your ego. We once had in my house before COVID, We had a Journeys Only Kumsitz. I invited a bunch of people from around the neighborhood who I knew enjoyed the music, and I printed up song sheets. I went online, I found all the lyrics, passed them around, and we went around. We only sang Journeys. It was a Friday night. It was one of the most enjoyable Kumsitzes that I've ever been a part of. I know that you're the king of collaboration. Every album has somebody that you're singing with. If there's somebody out there that you have not been able to collaborate that you would like to, who would have, and honestly for you, I would have answered Avram Fried until this year, until 3 weeks ago. Is there somebody out there that you haven't been able to collaborate with that you would love to collaborate with?
I'm sure there are. I collaborated with Baruch Chait. I did an album with him back in 1974. Actually two albums with him. I did a Shabbos Kol Salonika album with him, and I did an album with Baruch and Shlomo Kalba. It was a collaboration that I had the honor of being, it was called the Shlomo Kalbach and the Children of Jewish Song.
I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, it's a great album. I did the children's choir. Okay. I was like 21, 22 at the time. I was, you know, just a young, I was, you know, trying to hang around, you know, those chevra, and I was lucky that they thought that I could do a good job with the children, and it was very, very enjoyable. I mean, obviously it's not something I can do, but if I was able to, if I would have been able to in years past collaborate with Benzion Schenker on something that would have been meaningful to me. I love Majid's music. I love that particular Hasidus. The music of that Hasidus made a impression on me. And it's part of my musical, my musical origins. We used to have, you know, those albums in the house. I used to listen to them.
You just passed Purim. Shoshanas Yaakov was here. But yeah, my Shoshana's kids, Yaakov, I sing that with them all year round. I don't know.
Right. You know, they had something special, and Prok Yasanov, and you know, just some very, very special tunes. And so I obviously would have loved to have done something with him. I'm not that familiar with so many of the contemporary artists. I really don't know them that way. I usually, you know, if I meet them, I meet them at the concerts, and it's right for a minute or two here, but I've collaborated with Avramel, with Mordechai, with, you know, with so many of these wonderful people.
I'd be interested in hearing an A.B. Rottenberg, Ohad Moskowitz collaboration.
I've sung with Ohad on stage.
Yes. I want to hear like a recorded track down is written for like that. I think that would be beautiful. You have the power and the sweetness that would be my And my last song that I usually ask is, and I answered this already for you for my personal one, but underrated songs or albums that could be your personal songs or somebody another artist's songs that you think should be played, that should be given another look-see, that you think that don't have the aren't as popular as they probably should be.
That's a great idea. I think I'm going to talk. I think Donnie Gross and I talked about this a little bit. You know, I agree. Like Inve Agefen, I think, is a perfect example of a song that really should be out there. Should be sung at Simchas. It's a sweet song.
I think
song.
People were introduced to it when Kol Zimra covered it.
Kol Zimra covered it. But I think we could do that again. And I have some Dveika songs. I think Rachem Al Tzion from Dveika's Five,
the Shabbos album.
The Shabbos album is a beautiful song that never really made. But again, you know, I'm so fortunate because there are songs that are popular that just as easily for some reason could have flown by the radar and not been successful. So I'm certainly not going to be, you know, going to complain about songs that I thought should be a little bit better covered, but maybe one day we'll do an album of what is Baruch called? Baruch Levine called For the Record?
Off the record?
Right. Yeah. So maybe we'll do an album called Really Off the Record or Way Off the Record or something like that. Like songs that never made it, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm sure, you know what? The best thing, I'll call Yossi Green. I'll tell him to give me two of his songs that he really felt should make it and didn't make it. I'll call Baruch Chait. We'll do the same. We'll get, you know, an album of, let's say, five composers, and each one will contribute two songs. And we'll do 10 songs, and we'll see if we can, if they can become hits.
I would be the first one to buy that album. That sounds so amazing because there's so many.
Second chance.
Oh yeah, exactly.
that's the name of the album. Second Chances, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that people are climbing over themselves to put out new content, new albums, new music all the time. There are so many old songs that nobody knows that probably deserve a second chance. Maybe if they just retweaked a little bit and just re-released to the public, I think that would be phenomenal. I want to give you a chance to show people where they can find your music, find Journeys 5, find.
So we're hoping to right now Journeys 5 is not available yet on streaming. We hope to upload it probably the end of this week, maybe before Shabbos we'll do it, just in time for Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so they can listen for a couple of weeks before and during Chol HaMoed. But it's available on iTunes. It's available at Mostly Music for download. If you get it from Mostly Music, you will also get the PDF booklet on the download. So if you want to look at the words, I'm also uploading, hopefully tomorrow, to YouTube. I'm going to upload a video of the sampler, which has a little piece of each song. And when the song is played, it'll show and display the page with the words from that song. So you can follow it that way. See, it's available on CD. It's also available on USB. The USB is a very cute little music card. It's like a credit card, and you pull out the USB comes out of the card. You can use it in your car, in your computer. And then after you're done, put it back in the card, put the card in your wallet, in your pocket, in your car. And there are 15 songs. 14 of them are real songs. One of them is a tribute to Moshe. Yes, but many people have told me they like that very much. So,
I did. 15 tracks, 14 songs.
15 tracks, 14 songs.
Right.
So it's a long album. Yeah, we almost had to get special CDs. So it's about 75 minutes of music. So it's, if we had gone like two more minutes, we wouldn't have been able to fit on a regular CD. So so there's a lot of content. I urge you, if you pick up the CD, if you download it, listen to it when you have time, listen to it when there's peace and quiet, when you're not, you know, being, when the Kindlech aren't running around and when they've gone to sleep already, or you know, in your car, when you have time to contemplate, because it's not easy listening. It's not background music. It's something that we want you to listen to and think about and absorb and hopefully be uplifted with. And if that happens, Matova Manoyim, it'll be a tremendous, it'll give me a tremendous amount of chizuk if that happens to everyone out there who buys it and listens to it.
Amazing. When the album came out, I just messaged my friends, like, I haven't bought music. Like, I have streaming services. I haven't bought music in 15 years. How do I buy music these days? I had no idea I could do that. I went on Mostly Music.
Right.
I got the download, and then I ordered the CD, so I have that also. Right. I have one more question for you, and then I certainly appreciate your time and all that you've given us, and this has been an amazing experience for me. We spoke a lot about legacy in this conversation. What do you want your legacy to be?
Look. You know, take the words from nothing in your life. These are words that I believe in. That you give of yourself to help another. Helping another is it could be financially. It could be with a soothing word. It could be with helping an old lady across the street. It could be, there's so many ways, a smile, a pat on the back. If through my music, I've helped people, given people strength, written something that got them through difficult times, maybe had them reconsider, you know, what they were doing, the direction they were going with in their lives. If I was able to do that to one person, you know, it's Dayenu. We're coming up to the Seder, you know, Ilu Hotzianu Mitzrayim Dayenu. That would be enough for me to know that I impacted one person, and hopefully, you know, generations to follow from that person's progeny. But if I was able to do that to many people, that would be, you know, the greatest legacy that I could possibly have. And the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me the talent to compose songs and write songs, at least I'll know in some way I took that and I used it in a positive way. Did I do as much as I could? Probably not. Surely not. Everybody can do more and more and more. But to some extent, I was able to take the gifts he gave me and hopefully impact people in a positive way.
Avi Rottenberg, I want to thank you not only for this interview, but for all that you've given to our community.
Thank you so much, Izo. Hatzlacha with your program. And, you know, I'm sure you have tremendous, you're a great interviewer. So, you know, I'm sure that people enjoy watching your programs, and they, it should be more and more listeners and more people inspired by you as well.
I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a good night and a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Thank you.
To you and all your listeners. All the best.
My thanks to A.B. Rottenberg not only for joining me this week, but for the indelible mark he has left on the Jewish people. Although we were able to touch on some of his most famous songs, there are many, many more we were unable to discuss. Songs that even if you're not familiar with his work, you definitely know. We wish A.B. a tremendous amount of hatzlacha in his hopefully next project. And to him, and to you, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.